Have the big banks lost the upper hand in Washington?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson. At this time yesterday, we told you about a vote that was about to happen in the Senate. It involved the fees retailers pay banks every time you use your debit card. Well, the new Dodd-Frank financial reform law puts a cap on those fees. The banks didn't like that, and yesterday's vote would have at least temporarily meant no cap. But the banks lost that battle in the Senate yesterday, and some are wondering if that means they'll lose other fights over new rules in the Dodd-Frank law. Karen Petru is with Federal Financial Analytics, and she joins us now from Washington. Good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
Well, Karen, have the banks lost their sway in Washington after this vote?
No, I don't think so. And no one should win all the time, and banks never did, and they won't, and that's fine. You know, sometimes they should win, sometimes they should lose, and I think the question is which. But, you know, they're not the omnipotent force sometimes portrayed in particularly the more, you know, evil-minded view of the industry.
Well, right now there are a lot of rules that are part of the new financial reform law that are being worked out by the regulators. What kinds of things are at stake for the banking industry and for consumers in the coming months?
It's going to be a whole new game. What's at stake for both is a redefined strategic landscape for banking in the United States. And that's true not only for consumers day in, day out with their checking accounts, but also for corporations as new capital rules and other requirements required by the Dodd-Frank Act and global regulators come into play.
Karen Petru, Managing Director of Federal Financial Analytics, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Well, if you're looking for French Finance Minister Christine Lagarde today, you can find her on Twitter. She's taking questions a day before the nominations deadline in the race to run the International Monetary Fund. That's a job she wants, and it's one that's traditionally held by a European. Developing countries say it's time to change that tradition, but they may not get their wish this time, as Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Some emerging countries are backing one of their own, Mexico's central bank governor, Agustin Carstens. But so far, Carstens doesn't have enough support, according to Fred Bergsten at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
The truth is that the emerging market economies regard each other more as competitors and rivals than as allies in a coalition to oust the nasty Europeans or even Americans.
The top job was reserved for Europeans when the IMF was created after World War II. Mark Weisbrot at the Center for Economic and Policy Research says it's time to change.
It is symbolically rather insulting.
Still, now that European countries like Greece and Portugal are borrowing from the IMF, Europeans say it's not a good time to turn the job over to an outsider. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are higher this morning across Europe, about 0.2% higher in Frankfurt right now. On Wall Street yesterday, a sixth day of losses for the Dow. It fell 21 points to close at 12,048.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. By Manta, connecting millions of small business owners with new customers every day, on the web at manta.com. And by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu.
In about a half an hour, we'll find out how much the U.S. is buying and selling from other countries when the Commerce Department releases the latest figures on international trade. President Obama has said the future of American competitiveness depends on exports, and he wants to double U.S. sales of products abroad in the next few years. But with all that exporting, could the outsourcing of jobs follow? Marketplace's Jennifer Collins has that story.
Jared Carr's family owns Osagian Canoes in Lebanon, Missouri. Carr has always wanted to export more of the boats. The trouble was, the shipping added $500 to a $1,000 canoe.
With our canoes, you can't really fold them up. I wish I could create the one that was like the Jetsons car.
So instead of making a canoe that collapsed into that briefcase George Jetson carried to work, Carr hired a small manufacturer in Denmark to do the finishing work.
By not welding them together, we're able to stack them up in hundreds and 200s where we can actually ship them and make it cost effective for the end user.
And it puts Osagian among the ranks of the 250,000 U.S. small businesses that bring in $500 billion a year through exports.
Small businesses are the fastest growing part of exports.
Karen Mills is the head of the Small Business Administration. Her agency, along with the Commerce Department, advises small businesses to access loans and trains them to tap into overseas markets. Osagian attended a training last year.
More exports means more American jobs.
But it may mean sending some jobs overseas. Dante DiGregorio teaches international trade at the University of New Mexico. He says there's a fine line between exporting and outsourcing.
In the process of developing export ties, most international partners want to see it in both directions.
Chile buys mining equipment from the U.S., but Chilean workers put it together. South Korea buys high-tech equipment from the U.S., but it's installed by Korean engineers. He says that kind of activity is a good thing.
Trade is a two-way street, and there can be direct benefits to the U.S. from certain outsourced activities.
Osagian hires at least two workers in Missouri for every person in Denmark. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, to Northampton, Massachusetts, where a guy got a letter from Bank of America that was definitely worth saving. The letter said his home would be foreclosed on if he didn't pay up immediately. The amount he owed, according to the letter, $0.00. After the local TV station WWLP did a story on this, Bank of America told the man he could stay in his home, and they sent him a $150 check for the trouble. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
In China, one school is trying to revolutionize its curriculum by introducing indie rock.
They just started the rock band. To be perfectly honest with you, I've heard them. They're not very good, but it's something that they love doing.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Out goes memorization, in comes fun. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.